fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, you're darn right it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Happy Friday, man. Pat yourself on the back. You finally made it to the end of the week. I know you've been looking forward to that all week long since, like, I don't know, Monday when you first got here. So welcome into it. So wonderful to have you along for the ride. I am trying to just break down and decipher all the shenanigans and malarkey, as Joe Biden would put it, of what's all gone on today. There's a lot to cover. Obviously, we're not going to get to everything because we have a short amount of time with you and I chitting the chat and doing the thing on a daily basis, but we'll do as much as we can. There is a passing of a funding bill out of the House of Representatives, and I'm telling you, there are two things. I'm going to warn you on this program today. There are two things you're going to need. Probably a box of tissues and a punching bag. and one of them to get angry and one of them to cry a little bit. Coming up on the program, bottom of the hour, we have Ferris Cassell. She is an author of multiple books. Her latest book, Inseparable, The Last Surviving Twins of the Holocaust. She was able to sit down and write their story about how they survived the Holocaust, and they're still living today. We had the opportunity to have one of them potentially on the show today as well, but we chose just to have Fair, so that way we can really tell the story and not have individuals talking over each other. So, but we may have one of them on at some point. But Ferris Cassell, she'll be joining us at the bottom to talk about the last surviving twins of the Holocaust. So get your box of tissues out for that. There's a few times in history, if you want to put it that way, that really get to me, that really just hit that emotional spot. And this is one of them. So we'll have a hard time going through that one. The rest of it, you're just going to have to get the punching bag out because you're going to have to be very angry today. I'm going to try and keep you in a somewhat zen situation. So deep breath in. And let's recognize that there's a lot of stupid going on in the world today. Let's start off with some of that here, shall we? As we broadcast here out of the heart of the nation.
Do it live!
Making it happen each and every day. Let's get into what's trending. What do you say?
What's trending today?
Let's start off with the somewhat lighter note just for a moment here, shall we? And I say lighter note because, well, there's really not a light moment on the program today, but we'll try. So on the campaign trail, the Biden administration, which is on the road right now doing their campaign, kind of surprisingly, is we're not in the basement this year. Kind of weird.
Let's go into the Biden basement.
As you know, Donald Trump has a somewhat easier campaign this time than what he did in 2020 because he was coming off of his record, which was a overall decent record, I think, as a Republican. We thought that he did some relatively good things in the nation. The economy was kind of cranking along, except for the whole COVID-19 pandemic thing, but the economy was cranking along, gas prices were relatively low, inflation was down, and everything was chugging along. I mean, the border crossings were at an all-time low under the Trump administration. Things were doing relatively well. We obviously still had some work to do, but we were in a better shape than what we had been in a very long time. That was good news. Then Biden came into office and he created his quote-unquote 15 million jobs, and he's done his investing in America, and he's done his Green New Deal garbage, and he's done this, and he's tried to bail out student loans, and he's done everything under the sun to repeal everything that Donald Trump has done. Now we're in the state that we're in. So Donald Trump is a somewhat easier campaign than what he did in 2020, because now all you have to say is, look at the difference between our two records. I've had 4 years. He's had 4 years. Which one were you actually better off on? Again, excluding the COVID-19 pandemic, because that's kind of out of our hands, right? A global pandemic, you would think, would be off the record for what we're allowed to compare between the two candidates. But nonetheless, we can really look at, he's got a record, he's got a record. Which one's works? Which one's best? Well, the Biden administration is starting to recognize that as well, which is why they're on the campaign trail now, trying to respond to this argument is, are you better off than what you were previous to 4 years? And they've come up with an argument, I guess, if you want to put it that way, to try and counter that response. They released a video on the TikTok, or I'm sorry, on the Tweety, on X, where they're trying to respond to this by posting about a 30-second campaign ad. And it starts off with the texting of and showing the picture of Donald Trump tweeting out saying, are you better off now than what you were 4 years ago? This is what they said.
And then I see the disinfectant. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside?
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your response to this crisis?
I'd rate it a 10. I think we've done a great job.
What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say. Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all. We're doing, I think, really, really well.
I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And you it is what it is.
Wow. Okay, so during that whole video, by the way, if you want to go to the actual Tweety and actually look at this video, it's showing all the destruction, all the dead people, it's showing the vaccines, it's showing everybody starving, it's showing everybody staying at home. So I want to try and process here, because again, I'll respect anybody's opinion as long as I can understand the thought process. If there's no thought behind it, then I lose all respect for you because you're just saying dumb crap just to say dumb crap to try and fill the time and act really smart. So let's try and break this down, shall we? There's a comparison between the two candidates for the general election. We've had 4 years of Trump, we've had 4 years of Biden. And the very simple question is, which one did better and which one deserves a second term? Some people say none, which is why they're not voting for either one of them. Okay, fine. But let's look at these two for just a moment. Between those two, which one had a better administration? For jobs, for the economy, for spending, for taxes, for inflation, for immigration, for job growth, for the expansion of the nation, for the well-being of everybody. Just, again, taking out of a global pandemic that had no ill of anybody because, well, it was a global pandemic, not something that just happened here in the United States. So when Trump asked that simple question, the obvious answer for anybody with an IQ above 2 shows that Donald Trump would be the better candidate because his administration ran things better and the country was in a better situation then than what they are right now under the Biden administration. Even Democrats, even though they don't want to admit it, they're having to come to that admittance, which is why all of their minority demographics are all starting to agree with that. Oh, look at that. Gas prices were cheaper under Trump. I want that guy back. Oh, look, I had better job opportunities under Trump. I want that guy back. So they're trying to respond by saying Donald Trump botched the COVID-19 pandemic, and therefore he doesn't deserve a second term in office because he didn't care about the American people. They threw in the ridiculously stupid quote, if you heard it at the beginning, about him trying to ask questions about, they were trying to say like bleach, making people drink bleach or injecting people internally to try and get rid of the virus, and then saying, well, people die, that's just a matter of fact, well, my hands are clean, not a big deal, everything's fine, while they're showing in this video, obviously, this propaganda for all this destruction that happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, I will say that I know there are laws, campaign laws out there, that you are not allowed to openly and knowingly misguide people. It's politics, I know it is, so there's always that little rough around the edge. You can kind of do a little quote here, a little quote there, but there's laws out there, especially for like advertisements, if you're a business advertising your product, about falsely advertising things that are absolutely incorrect. And I would really argue that this one's really pushing that line. This one's really pushing the line on the misrepresentation of actually what happened. I want to play this again for you for just a moment.
And then I see the disinfectant. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside?
And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your response to this crisis?
I'd rate it a 10. I think we've done a great job.
What do you say to Americans who are watching you right now who are scared?
I say that you're a terrible reporter. That's what I say. Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all. We're doing, I think, really, really well.
I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And it is what it is.
No, my brain hurts a little bit. We need to just do it. We need to zen. Okay. This is the response from the Biden administration. They have nothing else. They can't talk about economy. They can't talk about gas prices, job growth. They can't talk about any of this garbage because it's not working for them. So their response to, are you better off than what you were 4 years ago under the Trump administration, is look at how badly he handled a global pandemic with COVID-19, which, by the way, their policies, the Democrat policies, were the ones that forced him to shut everything down, tell everybody they're not allowed to work. And then obviously Donald Trump didn't make, in my opinion, the best decision on the task force, the Fast and Furious, or the task force that he made for COVID, they did some good stuff, I guess, but they did try to really ram through the vaccine, and he was proud of touting that vaccine for turning it around so quickly. I don't know that you should be proud of that. And then he really backed off the vaccine stuff when we realized, hey, I'm not going to get the damn vaccine because you can't force me to do that just to live my life. So he had some learning to do, as did everybody. It's a global pandemic. How many times do we see a global pandemic? But nonetheless, I would say that his administration ran it way better than what a Biden administration would have done, because you can see how Joe Biden has botched literally everything that he's put his hands on throughout the last 3 years. So their response is, no, no, you're actually not better off. Look at that last year in office during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is really mind-boggling to me because I understand we have a short-term political mindset. We have a short-term memory in politics. I understand that. It makes sense. Okay. But that's really like saying that your cat died yesterday. The day before that was great. You were rocking it. You had a great day. You got a little bonus. Found 20 bucks on the side of the street. Yesterday, your cat died. And then today, you saw the gas went up 30 cents. And then someone's there telling you, be like, all right, are you better off yesterday or today? And you're like, well, my cat didn't die today. That's nice. But my gas is up. And 2 days ago, it was actually way better before gas went up 30 cents and my cat died. But they don't see that. No. Look at that day your cat died. Are you better than today or then? This is a stupid analogy. This is a stupid thing the Joe Biden administration is doing, but this is politics. And I would say that this one really needs to be challenged on the ethics of this campaign ad, on whether they're telling the truth, because there is so much false, manipulative garbage in that, that it's absolutely unbelievable. But yet that's the Biden administration. Of course, the media is not going to call them out on it. The ethics committees and government probably are not going to call them out on it. We can't even get Joe Biden impeached after a day-long hearing or AOC said some really stupid crap. What specific law did you actually see him break? Because they don't understand how law actually works. I'm telling you, get the punching bag out, man. You're going to see the blood boiling today. You're going to see yourself just boil over. If you're driving today, do not have road rage because of this program, I promise you, because this is absolutely absurd. Now, on the other front, there is some other bit of news.
What's trending today?
And we're going to try and get to as much of it as we can today, but the House of Representatives did pass another spending bill today. In fact, they passed a $1.2 trillion spending bill, which really blows my mind because I was under the assumption, could be wrong on this, and apparently I was, but I was under the impression that we passed 11 of the 12 appropriation bills. And by passing 11 of the 12 appropriation bills, there was one appropriation bill that was left, which was for the Department of Homeland Security, which was defense spending. And I have a hard time believing that all of this money went to defense for Homeland Security and for the military by spending $1.2 trillion. In fact, we know it's not the case because of some of the garbage that's in this bill that included late-term abortion spending, that included social programs for child care, that included a whole bunch of other social spending that has nothing to do with the Department of Defense. So if that's the case, then why are we spending another $1.2 trillion monstrosity garbage bill after already passing 11 of the 12 appropriation bills in government to keep government funded with an actual regular federal budget, then we turn around and do this? We'll get to more of the details of that in a moment. The problem is that now we have even a more thin margin of Republicans, and I have to say that I am, as much as I'm upset with this individual leaving early, I'm really honestly glad that we have a one-vote majority right now, because I really hope that from now until the election time, it is going to be a stagnant, stalemate, do nothing Congress, do nothing administration. I don't want them to pass a single bill beyond this from today until the end of the year when we actually transition in office, because the crap they're doing is getting us even further down the rabbit hole of stupid, and I'm kind of over it.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour, radio, TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you check us out, always a pleasure. So I'm telling you, I am so ready for Congress just to wrap it up, shut doors, and just walk away. I'm so over the garbage that goes on there, and especially with the Republican Party right now allowing this bill to even get to the House floor. I get it. Andy, you can't let the government shut down. We shut down every single weekend. I will tell you something right now. I do not care. Do not care if the government shuts down for a while we figure things out and do things the right way. If you can't get things done in appropriate time and get it done in a reasonable time and get it done on a deadline, like, I don't know, everybody else. If you have a job, let's just say you're an office worker and your boss comes to you and says, I need this project done by Friday. And you're like, okay, cool. and you're working on it and you're working on it. And then Friday comes and you're like, I need like another month's time. And your boss is like, well, what, another month? What are you talking about? All right, I guess. I mean, if, boy, you must be putting a lot into it. I guess. All right, cool. And then another month goes by and you're like, well, I need like another couple weeks. Man, you must be putting a lot of work into this project. All right, cool. I can't wait to see the final results. And then the final result finally comes after doing this over and over and over again. And you're like 6 months later into this project. And finally, they're like, dude, I really need this project done. Can you do it for me? And they're like, oh, yeah. Well, it's only about 50% done. But here you go. This is great. You'll enjoy this one. Like, what are we doing here? I don't care if the government shuts down. I know everybody loses their mind over that.
We're all going to die.
I really don't care, but once this is done, then once this, now that this bill's passed, we're going to keep the government open so everybody can stay safe. Don't worry. You're all going to be nice and roasty, toasty, warm with the government there, the safety net behind you, making sure that you're going to survive another day. I cannot wait until this is done because I do not want government to pass another single bill the rest of the year. Serious. And now that it's going to get even more of a narrow margin here, apparently Congressman Mike Gallagher from the state of Wisconsin has said that he is out and he's exiting even before his term is over and essentially being done by the end of April. He's notified Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and that he's going to be vacating. Now, I'm curious and I don't know why. Maybe someone else can explain this to me. If you could, go to our chat room, go to our social media, or go to the website at HoosierReason.com and email me. But I'm curious on why so many of them are walking out before their terms are over. If you're not going to run for re-election, cool, that's awesome. But why harm your own caucus? And oh, by the way, you got voted in by your constituency to do a two-year term, to actually do your damn job for the duration of the term until the next election. So you're not only letting the Republican Party down with all of these Republicans, with Kevin McCarthy and Mike Gallagher and all these other ones that are just like, yeah, I'm out, not just actually finishing out their term and walking away, but just ending it, boom, done. I'm done by the end of the month. Figure it out yourself. Because this is, what, the second or third or fourth one that we've seen actually do this. And they're like, yeah, we're done by the end of the month. According to, what is this, Politico.com, made a statement saying, quote, I've worked closely with House Republican leadership on this timeline and looking forward to seeing Speaker Mike Johnson appoint a new chair to carry out the important mission of the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. So I don't know what we're doing with that, but I'm glad that you're fulfilling your job and actually doing what you need to do on that committee. But apparently was one that voted against Alejandro Mayorkas and the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas in the House of Representatives. And because of that, said he got a lot of heat from that. And because apparently we're so weak-kneed and spineless and we have such soft emotions that we have to walk away as opposed to just doing our job because someone may have criticized us for how we voted or how we stand on a certain issue. But now we only have a one-vote majority in the House of Representatives, which means Republicans are essentially going to be irrelevant, which means the five or six or seven wishy-washy rhino Republicans will probably be joining Democrats. And now Democrats essentially have a majority in both the House and the Senate and the presidency, because there will be a couple of Republicans that will have no problem shifting sides and voting with Democrats on the majority of issues. So congratulations, Republicans. You've now made yourself the minority in both chambers and essentially irrelevant while we're trying to show how strong we are going into election season. Shame on you.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
I want to clarify something real quick before we move on here. After this one vote majority the Republicans have in the House and this Mike Gallagher, congressman from the state of Wisconsin, that said he's stepping down, he's going to be vacating his seat. It's going to be an open seat until the election time. Wisconsin working on a special election, but I mean, how much time do we actually have that? So you're right. I'm getting a lot of comments on some of the different feeds here. And I got a couple of emails as well saying, Andy, Mike Gallagher's a rhino. He's a middle-of-the-road guy. We need to get him out. We're draining the swamp. We're cleaning the swamp. And you're right. And the positive side of this thing is the fact that we are getting rid of some of the quote-unquote wishy-washy rhinos that are not helping our cause at all in the first place. So that is good news. That is good news. And for that, I give you the proper farewell here, Mike Gallagher, on this program. Because I don't care. Good for you. We're draining the swamp. However, it's an obligation that you have if you got elected to run for an office and you're in there for a two-year term. A two-year term in politics is not very long because you're essentially campaigning for an entire year out of that 2 years. So you're not doing a lot of work. But why would you vacate before your term is up? Why would you do that? Because that shows that you not only care about your constituency, I mean, you just don't care about them, you're not representing them properly. Those people in that district in the state of Wisconsin now have zero representation once he leaves office at the end of April. And to me, that's a problem. But you're also letting down your party, which is the Republican Party, even though you kind of fought against us, that's fine. But you're letting them down as well by, you know, realizing that we have a slim majority in there, and it's pretty devastating. So good for you. I mean, get out, I guess. So long, see you well, farewell. But at the same time, like, if you're going to run for office, then you should at least fulfill your obligation. It is draining the swamp, but it is good news. And I am very optimistic of where we're going as a party if we would stop some of the crazy spending shenanigans. All right, that's enough of that. I want to shift gears a little. I told you there were two things you were going to need today, a punching bag for the ridiculous politics and a box of tissues for what's about to come on this program. Because of
what's trending today.
Yeah, because of how sad and how bad some of this is. As you know, there are a few different moments in history that really just drive it home, and whether it's kind of reflecting on what's going on in today's times, trying to do the comparison, whether it's just hearing the stories of the generations. Again, being a millennial, I never signed up for the military. I haven't seen some of the travesties that so many have out there, and God bless them for being part of that. But the greatest generation, they call it the greatest generation for a particular reason, because they saw so much garbage that I feel so bad for them, and they have stories that we can never, ever, ever let go to the wayside. And there's a reason for that. So to talk about that and more, I'm really happy to have on the program in our latest in What's Trending, author of the book Inseparable, The Hess Twins Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. This is the last surviving twins that ended up surviving through the Holocaust, and this is their story with the author of the book, Ferris Cassell, on the line with us here. Ferris, how are you, my friend?
Hi, I'm great.
Good. I'm excited to appreciate you coming on the show today. What an impactful story. I cannot wait to read this book because, and again, get your box of tissues out, because I can only imagine the stories that are in this and how devastating some of this can be for the readers. Talk about this book and where you got this.
Yeah, this is an incredible story. It's both horrifying and inspiring. This book grew out of an op-ed that one of the twins, Marion Hess, wrote for the Los Angeles Times now 4 years ago. In that op-ed, she expressed her admiration, her gratitude for COVID workers, for their resilience, for their selflessness, risking their lives helping those in need. And she wrote, though they reminded her of Jews imprisoned in the concentration camp Bergen-Belsen, who courageously helped each other as they could to survive. Marion knew about those prisoners. She knew about the barbed wire, the huge piles of dead bodies, because she and her family were survivors of the camp. So by a serendipitous route, her op-ed came to the attention of my publisher, who asked me to write this incredible story.
Yeah.
So I was doing it during the time of COVID, and so I had to do most of my interviews with the twins by phone and email and Zoom. There were any vaccines, and when the planes were not flying. So they were just wonderful in their efforts to answer all my questions. I have met them now, and we've talked a lot.
Good, good. I'm glad. How old are they now?
They were born in 1938. They are now 86. You might think, 86, they are hobbling around, in their rocking chairs, whatever. No. They are lively there. I was worried. I thought, 80s, wow, this is, I don't know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
But they are so sharp, and active. They're eager to tell their story. They travel in order to tell it. And their memories are just of, even though they were very young children, aged like 5 to 7, they have very sharp memories of what happened to them.
Sure. It is encouraging that they want to talk about this. I know that people that go through such a trauma and such a devastating trauma, something like that, that they kind of block it out, or they don't want to talk about it, or they just kind of stay quiet. But I think these stories, this message is needed in today's times more than ever, because we're coming up on about an 80-year cycle. And they always say things repeat after about 80 years. And we can see with some of the conflicts going on around the world that we're getting close to doing something, unfortunately, like this again. And we need to remember these stories to make sure we don't repeat them. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're here at a time of crisis for the state of Israel following that brutal attack by Hamas against Jewish Israeli civilians.
Yeah.
It took the life of 1,200 citizens, innocent citizens, in one day, which is the equivalent of over 40,000 Americans. That doesn't even include the over 200 hostages, which include American citizens. So this is a horror, and it's magnified by Hamas's cruel strategy of hiding among its civilians.
Is there a correlation there?
It's a horrifying time.
From the stories that you heard and what they've told you, is there a correlation there between what's happening against the Israeli state today and as the Jewish community back then, with the rounding up the Jewish community in the beginning of World War II, where Germans started to invade all over Europe? Is there some similarities between their story and what's happening today, do you think?
Yes, in a way, there is. We see anti-Semitism rising, and the Palestinians, of course, everyone, Jews, Israelis, everyone, is horrified by the destruction in Gaza and the innocents who are suffering there.
Yeah.
The correlation is innocent suffering because of hatred during the Holocaust. It did not have to happen. That hatred was pushed and promoted and accepted by way too many people, including the lack of protection, the lack of concern by the people in Holland.
Yeah.
When some 25,000 Jews fled from Germany to Amsterdam, to Holland, and not only received no protection from the Jews, but from the Nazis, but also were given up, you know, to the Nazis.
Yeah. Did they mention at all on how that hatred started, that dehumanizing almost, where someone can agree that someone needs to be rounded up and taken away because of their faith, because of their background, because of their heritage, on how that mindset is able to start in society? And again, like you said, we're seeing it today with all the anti-Semitism going on, so we can kind of make that comparison. But how a group of individuals can say they're not human, therefore it's totally justified and okay to just round them up and put them into a camp? Like, I don't understand that thought process of how anybody can go along with that.
Boy, you've really hit the most important part of the Holocaust. How could people go along with it? And I think it has to do with people who feel some sort of weakness inside themselves. They have to turn against somebody else, thinking that at least somebody is worse than me. Somebody is worse off. I need to blame somebody for my own problems. It's a sign of, I think, weakness.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have all sorts of forces in America that could be working in the other direction, working for love of our neighbors. And, we have to remember those kind of American roots, which is what has always made us strong,
yeah,
that we hold together.
Amen to that. Ferris, we got to take a hard break here. Can you stick over one more segment with me?
Sure. Thank you.
Perfect. I appreciate it. I want to continue this conversation. We're talking with Ferris Cassell. She is the author of the book Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit more of their story for the last few minutes and talk about how their journey did go through and actually get away from the SS, get away from the Nazi soldiers, and actually the experience and travel of making it to the United States and that safe haven. Again, the United States is supposed to be that safe haven to stop some of that radicalness. Are we seeing that in today's times? We'll cover some of that and more right around the corner. Last segment, I told you, get the box of tissues out. This is a hard one, but it's important to talk about. Lots more right around the corner here on The Voice of Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome back into it. Doing the thing on a Friday today, trying to be your political therapist. Therifying you on a daily. I think I'm the one that needs therifying today after the ridiculous news going out today. We need to be more zen. More zen. It's all right. This is the hard conversation, though, as we're having right now. Wrapping up the program. Author of the book Inseparable, The Hess Twins' Holocaust Journey Through Bergen-Belsen to America's. We're hanging out with Ferris Cassell, author of the book and interviewer of these, the last living twins that survived the Holocaust. So, Ferris, we got about 4 or 5 minutes left of the program here as we wrap things up. But tell me in kind of a brief synopsis of this story and some of the highlights of these twins that were able to make it out of Europe, make it away from the SS soldiers, make it away from the Nazis, and be able to make their way to the safe haven here that is the United States.
Oh, gosh.
I can imagine. It's a tough one because there's a lot in there. I can imagine.
There's so much. It's a winding path they took. This was a German-Jewish family, Carl and Ilse Hess, a newly married couple who fled Germany when the Nazis took power, and the writing was on the wall that life would not be workable for Jews under the Nazis in Germany. So they fled to Amsterdam at the time when it was still possible. Carl fled first, he was transferred in his job with a German company, so he was able to cross the border fairly easily. He went first to get the apartment and begin his job. His wife, Ilse, followed a few weeks later, and she had the task of crossing that dangerous border with the family's valuables, which the Nazis wanted to steal. And there is a hilarious story, one of the light spots in this dark, dark time, which one of the twins told me. Ilse had left her jewelry for safekeeping with a friend in Switzerland, who brought it to her just before Ilse planned to leave. Marion said about her mother that her mother never wore makeup. She always dressed fashionably but respectably. And she told me that to cross the border and leave Germany, she dressed in a tacky outfit that included a red jacket with black velvet lapels. She put on mesh stocking, lots of makeup, and simply pinned the jewelry to her lapels.
Wow.
In her exact words, she said, "I looked like a 10-mark hooker." How could you make up something like that? So that was a light spot in some of the humor, black, dark humor that you could see in this story. But they eventually were transported first to a transit camp called Westerbork in Germany, and then they were transported to Bergen-Belsen.
Wow.
In the beginning, Bergen-Belsen was just barely survivable, but then as the Allies gained ground and the Soviets began pushing from the east, heading towards Bergen-Belsen. The Germans evacuated the camps that were on the east, so that their horrible dark secret wouldn't be discovered, that they were committing genocide. So the camp was flooded with sick, you know, with diseased and famished other prisoners, which spread disease all through Bergen-Belsen. People were dying like crazy. At this point, Ilse, who had satin black hair, she was considered very beautiful, but her satin black hair turned white. She lost partial sight in one eye. Wow. And at that same time, her husband was beaten to a pulp for the crime in Bergen-Belsen of allowing men in his, Carl allowed men in his work detail to take a quick break.
Yeah.
So he was beaten beyond recognition. Ilse contracted typhus from all of these crowded, cramped conditions.
Well, I tell you what, let's...
And even at this time, Ilse said, I survived. I always had the feeling when I got up in the morning, I will survive the whole German army.
Oh, wow. I love it. That is a perfect way to tease the rest of the story for people to read it. Go check it out, Inseparable. You can find it on Amazon, other places as well. Ferris, thank you so much for doing this book. Thank you for coming on. We got to get you back on again real soon.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. There it is. Back at it again next week. Until then, everybody have a great weekend. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.